వాసుదేవాయ ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ హరే కృష్ణ. వి ఆర్ రీడింగ్ ఫ్రమ్ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం క్యాంటో 10 చాప్టర్ 82 టైటిల్డ్ కృష్ణ మీట్స్ ద ఇన్హాబిటెంట్స్ ఆఫ్ వృందావన్. టుడే ఫర్ డిస్కషన్ వీ హ్యావ్ టెక్స్ట్ నెంబర్ 37 అండ్ 38. టెక్స్ట్ నెంబర్ 37 ఇస్ ఆన్ ద బోర్డ్, కైండ్లీ రిపీట్. కా విస్మరేత వా మైత్రిం అనివృత్తం వ్రజేశ్వరీ అవాప్యప్యన్ ఐంద్రమైశ్వర్యం యస్యా నేహ ప్రతిక్రియా. కా విస్మరేత వాం మైత్రిం అనివృత్తాం వ్రజేశ్వరీ అవాప్యాప్యైంద్రమైశ్వర్యం యస్యా నేహ ప్రతిక్రియా. కా విస్మరేత వాం మైత్రిం అనివృత్తాం వ్రజేశ్వరీ అవాప్యాప్యైంద్రమైశ్వర్యం యస్యా నేహ ప్రతిక్రియా. స్మరేత వా మైత్రిం మదర్జీస్. We'll read the word-to-word translation. Ka, what woman, vismareta, can forget, vam, of you two, that is Yashoda and Nanda, maitrim, the friendship, anivrittam, unceasing, vrajeshwari, O queen of Vraja, avapya, obtaining, api, even, aindram, of Indra, aishwaryam, opulence, yasya, for which, na, not, iha, in this world, pratikriya, repayment. Translation by the humble servants of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Rohini and Devaki said, what woman could forget the unceasing friendship You and Nanda have shown to us, dear Queen of Vraja, there is no way to repay you in this world, even with the wealth of Indra. Text number 38, translation and then subsequent purport. Translation. Before these two boys had ever seen their real parents, you acted as their parents and gave them all affectionate care, training, nourishment and protection. They were never afraid. Good lady, because you protected them, just as eyelids protect the eyes. Indeed, saintly persons like you never discriminate between outsiders and their own kin. Purport. As Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti explains, Krishna and Balram had not seen their parents for two reasons. First, because of their exile in Vraja. And second, also because they are never actually born and therefore have no parents. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti also describes what Devaki thought before speaking this verse. So quote, "Alas, because for so long these two sons of mine had you, Yashoda, as their guardian and mother, and because they were immersed in such a vast ocean of ecstatic loving dealings with you, now that you are once more before them, they are too distracted to even notice me. Also, you are behaving as if insane and blind with love for them, showing millions of times more maternal affection than I possess. Thus, you simply keep staring at us, your friends, without recognizing us. So, let me bring you back to reality on the pretext of some affectionate words." Quote complete. So now this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Then, when Devaki failed to get any response from Yashoda, even after addressing her, Rohini said, quote, "My dear Devaki, it's impossible just now to rouse Yashoda out of this ecstatic trance. We are crying in the wilderness, and her two sons are no less bound up in the ropes of affection for her than she is for them. So, let us now go outside to meet with Pritha, Draupadi and the others." Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupah Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha. Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam. Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhano Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Namaom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale శ్రీమతే భక్తి వేదాంత స్వామీనితి నామినే నమస్తే సరస్వతే దేవే గౌరవాణీ ప్రచారిణే నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాదీ పాశ్చాత్య దేశ తారిణే జై శ్రీ కృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధర్ శ్రీవాసది గౌరభక్తవృంద హరే కృష్ణ హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ హరే రామ 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 హరే 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 కృష్ణ. బిఫోర్ స్పీకింగ్ ఆన్ దిస్ వెరీ డిఫికల్ట్ సెక్షన్ where two parents are meeting each other, Devaki and Vasudev are meeting Nanda and Yashoda. So this is a very intense section, a lot of emotional turmoil going on here. We saw from the purports of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur of what is going on in the hearts of Devaki and Rohini. I do not see myself as fit to even touch these subject matters. So we'll try to simplify this conversation, and at the end we'll try to speak some lessons that we could learn from this conversation. So in text number 37 that is on the board, Devaki is referring to Yashoda and says, what friendship you have shown. You are such a good friend. But if you read the Srimad Bhagavatam, we do not see Devaki and Yashoda spending time together. Friendship for us is staying together, joking together, being together, having a nice time together, sometimes sharing sorrows together. But we do not see any other section where Devaki and Yashoda had a very nice conversation for a long time and they shared each other's expectations from each other. And then probably when they departed from each other, they fulfilled those expectations. And now then Devaki is saying, you are such a good friend. So right at the outset we can understand, friendship is not just about physical proximity. Friendship is about trying to help, trying to serve the other person in a way that that person is happy, that person's benefit is taken care of. So because Devaki sees Krishna as her son, and she is saying in her own words, these are the words, she is saying, you took good care of these two boys, Krishna and Balram. You gave them full affectionate care. You gave them training. You gave them nourishment. And you gave them protection. These four things, because Yashoda gave to Krishna and Balram, Devaki thinks she is her best friend. So this is another definition of friendship, where it may not necessarily be based on external visible symptoms like sweet words, or maybe a pat on the back, or an arm around the shoulder. But this is on what will actually please the other person. So because Devaki is very much attached to Krishna and Balram, and Krishna had to be transferred to Nanda and Yashoda. So she is recounting that and she is saying, because you did this in service of Krishna and Balram, that's why you are my best friend. And then what is the evaluation of that friendship? She's speaking four words: care, training, nourishment and protection. So we'll just see what protection, what training did Yashoda give to Krishna that she is considered as the best friend by Devaki even in her physical absence. So one incident, there are many incidents, but then we'll just focus one each for each of these four words. So protection, so many times in Vrindavan Leela we see how Krishna is all alone outside his home playing, and then Trinavarta just picks him up. He's alone in his cradle, and Putana comes, picks him up, and tries to feed him poison. Sometimes Krishna is all alone in the sense, there are no elders around. There is no protection in that sense. He is along with his small boyfriends, calves, cows, and like that. And then so many times some demons attack. So what protection did Yashoda and Nanda actually arrange? So one incident that we have decided to mention is, that in the first attack on Krishna, when Putana came and tried to kill Krishna, and then she was unsuccessful. So then when Putana dies and falls down, they see Krishna, baby Krishna, on the body, the chest of Putana. So then they immediately pick him up, and then out of a desire to protect Krishna, seeing a 12-mile long huge body of a witch, of a demon, and then little baby Krishna. So then what is the best protection for Krishna as per Yashoda and Nanda? From a modern perspective, they are not interested in any security guards or any security system also. They have a simple way of protecting Krishna. What is that? They take the tail of a cow, move it around Krishna. That's the first thing that they do to invoke auspiciousness. They smear his body with cow dung. They smear his body with cow urine. And then it is mentioned, all the gopis and Yashoda, they took that cow dung and uttering different holy names of the Supreme Lord Vishnu, they marked his body at 12 different places and were praying, may Lord Narasimhadeva protect this part of your body, may this Rishikesh protect this part of the body, and so on. So probably, you know, we would feel that this was the first time that something inauspicious is happening, and that's why they went for a simple remedy. But even that does not make logical sense. Seeing a huge witch like that, they should have done something more. But that's how Vrajvasis are. That's how Nanda and Yashoda is. Does this strategy change in the future? Never in the future we read how some more demons came, some came in the form of horrifying animals, in the form of Arishtasur or maybe Bakasur, who had a huge body and was much more dangerous in the form of his long beak. But never we read about that Nanda and Yashoda, they came together and they thought, maybe we should have some kind of bodybuilders or some heavily built armed men in their own way to protect Krishna. So what is the concept of protection from Nanda and Yashoda's perspective? They are simple cowherd men, ardent devotees of the Supreme Lord Vishnu. So they believe in protection by the Supreme Lord. They do not believe in complicated, sophisticated kind of protection in the form of equipment or men. They believe in the most basic kind of protection in the form of auspiciousness invoked by the Supreme Lord. The next word that is mentioned is nourishment. So what kind of nourishment did Yashoda give to Krishna? First and primary, she fed him her own milk. That was the most nourishing substance that Krishna would look for. Also we know how she would choose the best cows out of her 9 lakh cows and then take milk from it and then transform into the butter. That was Padma Gandha milk. And then just feed butter to Krishna. We never hear of some very, you know, artificially manufactured or artificially combined ingredients in order to give the best nutrition in terms of what we see as nutrition today. And then, that's what the mother wants to do, to feed her own child the best that she can offer. And she did that. And then it is mentioned how one day she understood that Durvasa Muni has been pleased on Srimati Radharani. So one of the few personalities on which Durvasa Muni is pleased. Usually we hear of Durvasa Muni getting angry. Another personality is Kunti Devi. So these two personalities we hear that Durvasa Muni somehow, you know, he changed his original natural mood and became happy on them. And then he blesses Srimati Radharani by saying, I give you a benediction. I am pleased by your service. Whatever you cook, if somebody eats, he will be without any disease. He will live long and he will lead a healthy life. So now think from Yashoda's perspective. Yashoda is a mother, Krishna, and such a loving child. Who could be more loving than Krishna? And then she's already planning the best menu in her own way, in a simplistic way for Krishna. And then she understands there is another personality who's a young girl and who's been blessed by Durvasa Muni that she will give life through her food to anybody who eats that food. And very simply, in a very humble way, she retreats. And she invites Srimati Radharani to cook at her home. And then from that day onwards, Srimati Radharani is cooking for Krishna. And Yashoda is also cooking, most probably. But then the point was, she does not mind replacing her position as the feeder of her own child, which no mother would want to do, just to ensure that Krishna gets the best nourishment and Krishna leads a healthy life. It's tough on the ego of a mother. The third thing that is mentioned by Devaki that Yashoda did very exemplary is training. So what training did Yashoda and Nanda give to Krishna? When Vasudeva and Devaki were separated from Krishna, And then after 11 years, after 11 long years, when Krishna comes back, Balram comes back in the arena when Kamsa was killed. So it is mentioned they were eagerly waiting. This is the day that they have been looking for. And then Krishna and Balram come. Yes? And then there is a small incident how, because they have been overwhelmed by the display of power of Krishna and Balram by killing the three assistants of Kamsa, Chanur, Mushtik and Tosha or Tola or something like that. And then Kamsa. So, although they have been longing to meet their sons, somehow that display of power prevents them from relating to them as sons, and they are just stunned. And then Krishna and Balram, they come and hug them and embrace them, and then it proceeds. But then in a matter of few days, Vasudev and Devaki, they think, oh, 11 years they were in that village and probably there was no proper Gurukul for them, and they are going to be members of the royal family, so we need to send them to a Gurukul. So here is Vasudev and Devaki who just gave birth to Krishna and spent a few moments with Krishna. And Krishna tells them, transfer me to Gokul, transferred. 11 years later they come. So instead of spending time with Krishna and Balram, they think it wise, we need to educate our children. We need to train our children. We need to send them to a Gurukul. And they send them to a Gurukul for 2 months, 64 days. So this is Vasudev and Devaki's idea of training. What is Nanda and Yashoda's idea of training? So the Gopal Champu, it mentions that the first 3 years of his life, Krishna was just busy playing in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. And then one day when he was 3 years old, he went and requested to Yashodamai and Nanda Maharaj. He said, now I am old enough, now I have grown up, now you should give me some responsibility. So then they said, what responsibility? He said, now I am grown up to take care of the calves. So they are cowherd men, so the business is to take care of the cows, but men will take care of cows. So Krishna is proposing, small boy that I am, grown up small boy, I will take care of the younger cows, that is the calves. So Yashodamai, she reminds him, you know what, you have not even given up taking milk from my body. You are still in that situation. Says, that may be the case, but I am also grown up just enough, probably not so enough to leave your milk, but just enough to take care of calves. And it is mentioned there is a very beautiful ceremony that takes place, and at the age of 3, Krishna begs and in reciprocation is given the responsibility of taking care of calves. So it is mentioned in that beautiful ceremony, Nanda and Yashoda, they award him 4 objects. They gave him a small reddish stick, they gave him a rope to bind and probably pull the calves. They also gave him a buffalo horn, and they also gave him a flute, a small flute. And then it is mentioned on the first day when this thing took place, this is not Gopashtami, Gopashtami is when he took charge of the cows, this is a simple event. On the first day, Nanda and Yashoda, along with that small troop, this little Krishna, this little Balram, little Gopas and little calves, they actually go with them till some distance. Obviously they don't go deep into the forest because it is unsafe, but they go some distance. And because they are accompanying him, Krishna turns back and says, alright, so you did your part and I allowed you to accompany me till this point. Now I feel you have done your part and now we'll take charge. And Nanda and Yashoda are just so pleased by his eagerness to accept responsibility, they turn around and leave. And that one day, Krishna and Balram and the small boyfriends, they take care of the calves. And there's just a small warning that don't go deep into the forest, and Krishna says, alright. So Prabhupada writes there, although Nanda and Yashoda are very aristocratic people, they are the leaders, they are the king and queen, Vrajeshwari, of that Vrindavan area. So actually they belong to a well-to-do family. There's no doubt about that. But in this well-to-do family also, what is the concept of education? What is the concept of training? The concept of education is take care of others. At the age of 3, Krishna is saying, now I'm big enough to take care of another living entity. Now we would assume a 3-year-old boy to be not safe just even to take care of himself, what to speak of others. But Krishna is saying, I am old enough to take care of others. Nanda and Yashoda agree, allow, empower, and this goes on. So Devaki is saying, you gave nice training to my boys. And what is the kind of training? It is not A-A-E-E. It is not the alphabets. Much more than that, the Vrajvasis have this unique mood
of training in the sense of learn to take care of others. So it's very interesting how even as a small boy, the mood in Vraj is allow the small children to take care of others. So I was just thinking about this, that when a small child grows up taking care of others, what would that small child grow up to be? He would definitely be a very soft-hearted person. He would be somebody who would be very eager to learn, because you may have an intention to take care of somebody, but then there are some things which you need to learn, is it not? So we wish that Vidya Vinaya Sampanne. We wish that Vidya gives us Vinaya. We wish that education gives us humility, but all of us are testimony to the fact it does not give us humility. We are struggling with our hearts. The more educated we are, the more sophisticated we are struggling with the fact. I know humility is a prerequisite for advancement in devotional service. And on the other side, I have spent years and years before practicing devotional service where I was taught, the more you are erect when you walk, the more you have your neck, you know, seeing upwards, the more you will be respected and the more you are somebody in the world. That's how you show you are somebody in the world. So we all know how difficult it is to inculcate, cultivate humility. But I was just thinking that somebody who is raised from his childhood in this way, the first education that you receive in Vraj, you take care of others. So this is very interesting. And this is the training that Nanda and Yashoda gave to Krishna. That is what is being appreciated by Devaki. And then the fourth word that Devaki praises about Yashoda is affectionate care. So affectionate care, we would feel, would always mean to, you know, fondle him, cajole him, never become strict on him. That is the modern definition of care. Yes, never threaten your kids, never displease them, never even speak a rough word to them. It causes, you know, false impressions on them and so on. But we have very strong, important incident in Krishna Leela where Yashoda Mai's care for Krishna was shown in the form of binding him with a rope. Yes. So I would say it's not even verbal threatening, it's like a physical binding him up. And then it is mentioned how Sir Atanka Netram. So Krishna could see Atanka. Krishna was terrorized by the stick in Yashoda's hand. It means it went to quite a good extent. It was not just an external show. But then it is mentioned, why did Yashoda Mai bind him up? So one immature understanding of this pastime is, oh, you made me run, you made me sweat, drishtva parishramam Krishna. So you are the one who caused me all these hardships of running around. You should have just submitted to me when I called you, come here and I want to bind you. But you did all these hardships to me. In reciprocation to the hardship that you gave to me, now I'll bind you up. But that's not the reason why Yashoda bound him up. The reason why Yashoda bound Krishna is, Yashoda had prior experience that whenever Yashoda would try to discipline him in her caring mood, Krishna sometimes in fear of Yashoda would run away, and the nearest place in Vrindavan, it is one. So when he tries to run out of the village, it is a forest. And in the forest there are many dangerous animals like jackals, wolves and so on. So the reason why Yashoda bound him up with a rope is not to punish him. Because there was so much running around, and probably Yashoda thought, now that I have caught him, just in case he escapes, this time it will be very difficult to catch him, and this time he will straight run to the jungle, probably to be endangered by the wild animals there. The real reason why Yashoda bound him up is to protect him from the jackal's possibility. So this is why Devaki is praising Yashoda, that you have shown to these boys affectionate care, training, nourishment and protection. So this is very radical and non-conventional understanding of these four words, which I thought I should highlight. And then she glorifies Yashoda by saying, you protected my boys just like the eyelids protect the eyes. So I've never heard, you know, this kind of a comparison of protection. I have heard how Vidur is glorified by Yudhishthir Maharaj, or probably by Narad Muni, that you protected the Pandavas just like an eagle with its spread wings protects its small eaglets. So you protected the Pandavas like that. You never allowed them to come into any difficult situation. But Devaki, she is giving a very simple example. I took out 3 points from that. What is that? The eyelids are natural protection for the eyes. So Yashoda protected Krishna and Balaram in a very natural way. There was nothing artificial or sophisticated about it. Also, the eyelids are the first protection. They are the closest protection for the eyes. So Yashoda was always very close by. She was always the closest to Krishna. And also, one thing that strikes me about the eyelid example is, eyelids do not require some kind of a command from the brain to protect the eyes. It's spontaneous. So there are some actions in our body that are initiated by a command from the brain. And medically speaking, there are some actions that are called reflex action. So reflex action is one is the heart just keeps on beating. There is no connection between the brain and the heart that tells it to beat. Whereas if I want to lift my hand, there is some signal from the brain to the hand that now you should be lifted. So one of the reflex action that happens is, how if some object comes to the eye, then the eyelid will automatically close. It's just spontaneous. So how did Yashoda protect Krishna? Almost spontaneously. There was no need to inform her, to tell her. And that's why this comparison is made. So this incident, which is happening here, shows us that it's love, it's caring, it's when you show genuine concern for another person, that wins and that conquers over all other factors that would endear that person to somebody else. So there is a, in a conventional way, in a generally accepted way, Krishna is the son of Devaki and Vasudev. The first shloka of the Bhagavatam, it starts with these words, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And Prabhupada explains why it starts in this way. Why could not it just start with Janma Dyasa Yataha? It is that some people have mistakenly propagated conceptions. Like one scholar from Bengal, he at one point of time propagated a misconception that there are actually three different personalities by the name Krishna. There is one Krishna who is Krishna of Vrindavan. Then there is separate Krishna who is Krishna of Mathura. And then there is third Krishna who is Krishna of Dwarka. So, if the word Krishna is glorified many times in the Bhagavatam, then Vyasadev, he wanted to make sure that it is very clear which Krishna am I referring to. This Krishna is Vasudeva Putra Krishna, that Krishna who appeared in the Yadu Vansh, not any other Krishna. So probably there is some another Krishna who could claim, just like there are many people who claim to be Lord Chaitanya, because Lord Chaitanya just simply did dancing and chanting. But then Krishna, they don't want to mistake him. So then Vyasadeva says, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So Vasudev is the way in which Krishna is identified. In 10.8 Gita purport, there are many references to Vedic scriptures like Shruti. Because sometimes it is mentioned that Shruti does not directly mention Krishna as the Supreme Lord. The Shruti primarily mentions Lord Vishnu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada in that purport gives many references even from Shruti. So one is from the Narayana Upanishad where it is mentioned how the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Devaki Putra. So very clearly it is mentioned Devaki Putra, Vasudeva Putra. So these references indicate that Krishna is primarily identified in the Vedas and amongst the people who accept Vedic culture as the son of Vasudeva. But this Krishna in this situation that we are discussing today is completely, the word used is blinded. So Yashoda is blinded by looking at Krishna and Krishna is blinded by looking at Krishna and they are just looking at each other. And the words that Devaki is speaking, the words that Rohini is speaking are almost falling on deaf ears. There is no response from them. So here is a blood relationship in that sense, a hereditary relationship between mother, father and son. And then there is another relationship of 11 years of genuine care, training, nourishment and protection. And we just saw how there is nothing sophisticated about it. It is at a very simple level. It could not get any simpler than this. But finally what wins or conquers Krishna's heart is not the hereditary relationship with Vasudeva and Devaki. It is the love and the care and the concern that was shown genuinely by simple Vrajvasis offering care in whatever way they could, offering training in whatever they thought is important, offering whatever nourishment they thought is important and so on. So this shows how right from the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of everything, to all of us here, what will actually win a person's heart is not if we have an official relationship with that person. What will win a person's heart is if we actually show some genuine concern for that person. So sometimes we can compare this to, like, there are personalities who give us birth. And then there are personalities who brought us to Krishna consciousness, and in that sense, they cared for us. So in my own life, somehow, at least externally, it seems that my parents are not very favorable for Krishna consciousness. And at a time when I was trying to dedicate myself, it was quite a struggle. So, I myself faced a struggle. That out of gratitude for my parents who gave me birth, should I listen to them and not give more importance to what I felt is definitely very important for me? And not only it just made some intellectual sense to me, but the personalities or the people whom I met in my initial years of Krishna consciousness, I could see they were genuinely concerned about me. Probably they were not so sophisticated as my father. Probably they were not so much into giving me things as much as my mother. I have a lot of gratitude for my mother and my father. But just, you know, just to highlight this fact here, look, there was a period of contention for me where I was thinking, which way? So if I give more importance in my life to the care and concern shown by devotees who just marched into my life just a few months back, a few years back, and on the other side are my parents who are like years into my life and they have done what not for me. The brain that is thinking this contention is something that is nourished by my mother's food. The body that is thinking of serving Krishna has been raised by supplies from my father's income. But then what should I do? So at one point of time it became intense, but then somehow, yes, I decided that the care and concern wins against just the hereditary connection. This does not show that my parents did not care and they did not have any concern for me. But in a spiritual sense, I felt, you know, that opposition to Krishna consciousness should be given a back seat. And I should give more importance to my connection with those who genuinely care for me, who do not stand to benefit in a monetary way, who do not stand to benefit in a physical or emotional way by me obeying them or by me going on their side. So probably if I did not become a devotee, probably if I did not become somebody who is trying to serve Krishna, I would have stayed at home and contributed in a monetary way. I would have definitely contributed in a financial, in a physical way. Probably I would have served my parents in a much more better way than I'm doing now. But I'm still thankful that I took this decision. I gave more concern to those who cared for me rather than those who just gave birth to me. Taking this to another level, taking this to a spiritual level, so in a mature way with this audience, I'm sharing how sometimes it also happens that there are people who give us birth in Krishna consciousness. Yes? So we discussed how people gave birth to this body, and then there were people who gave us birth in Krishna consciousness. Now, in a spiritual way, there are people, there are personalities, there are devotees who give us birth in Krishna consciousness. And sometimes by the effect of time. And what is the effect of time? The effect of time is it obeys no one. It has its own will. It can happen that the personality who gave birth to us in Krishna consciousness is not the personality who nourishes us in Krishna consciousness. What it means is there is somebody who brought me to Krishna consciousness, but it is very much possible, considering the temporariness of this world, that there is somebody else in my life now who is nourishing me in Krishna consciousness. So again that same struggle comes. If I start taking nourishment and start associating more with the devotee who is giving me nourishment, am I being disloyal? Am I not being particularly grateful to those who gave me birth, whether physically or now, spiritually? So what it means is, although you might try to use your brain, so the brain would say, never ever forget your parents. It is because they gave you this body that now you have thoughts and now you have the ability to serve Krishna. But then, you know, if we really go deeper into it, then we say, alright, part of my gratitude to my parents is, if I serve Krishna nicely, and also not that I neglect my parents, but I take care of whatever duties are possible, but I serve Krishna primarily. So in a similar way, it can happen that somebody who gave me birth in spiritual life, due to whatever reason, this is not to blame anybody, this is not to point fingers at anybody, but it is very much possible that over a period of time, I may have to change my source of inspiration from the person who gave me birth in Krishna consciousness to the person who is today nourishing me, guiding me, encouraging me, inspiring me in my struggles in Krishna consciousness. So at one point of time, when it was a struggle between material life and spiritual life, there was a person who helped me make the right decision. Now within Krishna consciousness, now there are struggles which are far more intense, which are far more deeper, and which will have far more longer effect. In the sense, one mistake done in spiritual life, and probably it looks a very small mistake, but the effect is eternal, yes? One small offense to a good, tall personality in devotional service, and probably I might have to take lifetimes after lifetimes trying to just correct my mentality. One mistake on a material level, the effect is only in that body, probably in the next body. It's a small effect. So, this struggle of should I stay, you know, yes, please understand this in a proper context. Should I just stick to the person who brought me to Krishna consciousness, and is it a breach of etiquette that now I take more inspiration, now I give more attention to what I am receiving from somebody else, and this somebody else, the second person, is somebody who is actually genuinely caring for me more. So what we can learn from this incident, what I could see, that anukulyasa sankalpa means between my parents and between my spiritual parents, I should have definitely chosen my spiritual parents. And what the way I see it in my limited perspective is, even after coming to Krishna consciousness, if there is some personality who brought me to Krishna consciousness, but then because of some situation, if it is not possible for him to nourish me, if it is not possible for him to take care of me, I would say it is not a breach of etiquette to take inspiration from somebody else. Vande Gurun. That we have many spiritual masters. Of course, just like Krishna, the original candle remains the special candle, even though it lights 1,000 other candles. So similarly, the person who brought me to Krishna consciousness has a very special position in my heart. But practically speaking, if there is not much interaction with that person, if there is not much encouragement and inspiration from that person, it's important for me to actually seek inspiration just to stay alive. If I just keep reminding myself of the fact that no, probably it's a breach of etiquette, I should just stay loyal to my hereditary, you know, spiritually hereditary line, probably I might perish in devotional service. So anukulya sankalpa means constantly revisiting this question. What I'm doing right now, is it sufficient to nourish me in my struggles in Krishna consciousness? And I have seen over a period of time, not just myself, but some devotees, some others also, who over a period of time have undergone this struggle. It's a quite intense struggle. There's a lot of thoughts going crisscross in the heart. But then at one point of time, they had to take that harsh but practical decision that they had to take inspiration from somebody who's willing to give them time, who's willing to give them care and concern, and also who's always, you know, in one way, available for them to guide them and to help them. And I would say that is finally what will win people. So I would say this is a wake-up call for our preachers, that sometimes when preaching, we become so busy in preparing our classes, we become so busy in quoting the right shlokas and the right examples and so on. I'm not against it. It should definitely be done. That's how you actually, catch people's attention. But the point is, in doing all this, if the thought of caring for those devotees whom you are guiding goes into the background, then somewhere it is putting the cart before the horse. We thought of getting something, but then we got something else. So what will win if you are cultivating somebody, if you are preaching to somebody? That's what ISKCON is into. We are trying to transform people's hearts. So what we can learn from here is what actually transforms people's hearts is when we genuinely care for them. So one way of caring for people is to prepare nice classes. One way of caring for people is to give them tattva in a way that they actually understand. All I am saying is, we are not talking about the externals, we are talking about the mood in the heart. The mood in the heart is, whatever you are good at, you do that. But the mood should never be in a way that caring for devotees goes into the background. So if one always remembers, if a preacher always remembers, the purpose why I am taking care of others is to genuinely express my concern and care for them, not just to have a hereditary claim on my people. So sometimes it happens that one devotee has been brought to Krishna consciousness through some devotee, and then after some time he is seen associating with another devotee. So then, if we are not really rooted in our principles, we might actually take it as a threatening experience. And it can also happen, and it has happened, that a devotee will actually go and question physically, verbally, that person. You are connected to me, why would you spend more time with that devotee? What makes you associate more with that devotee? Which just shows that this person in one sense is trying to stake his claim to that living entity in a hereditary way. It is I who gave you the first shloka from the Gita. It is I who taught you who is the Supreme Lord. And now you dare not look anywhere else for inspiration. But if it is genuinely inspiring, if we genuinely care for somebody, why would he seek inspiration somewhere else? So the very fact that somebody is hunting for inspiration somewhere else, it shows a lack of care and concern from our side. So instead of trying to protect him or fence him off from another source of inspiration, it would just do us good to revisit the basics. In my efforts to give Krishna consciousness to this person, am I just giving him the external shell? Or am I actually giving him the real nourishment? And if somebody receives real nourishment from you, where is the question of him seeking the shell outside? Even if he tries to do it, attracted by some external attractive factors, very soon a person understands, what I was receiving before was nourishment. What I am receiving now is something else. And then such devotees will definitely return. So we never should be threatened. We never should feel uncomfortable when we see some devotees who are connected to us and they are finding more I would say, it just shows that what I could give, I gave. Yes? I can only give what I have. So I could give what I had and then I shared it with him. Probably now, the onward journey of this personality, of this living entity requires something more. So he had his stock full from whatever I could give, and this is my limitation. I do not have everything that is required for advancement in Krishna consciousness. I cannot be so arrogant to claim that. One time His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj was saying how we should always follow great souls, and when we try to imitate great souls, he compared it to arrogance. So what is arrogance in relationship with great souls? So Maharaj was saying, arrogance in relationship with great souls is when we try to imitate them. And then he quoted examples of Raghunath Das Goswami, what Raghunath Das Goswami said, we could never do it. So similarly, it is arrogant to think that I am somebody who can dish out to whoever asks everything and anything that is required for his or her advancement in Krishna consciousness. I would be so happy if somebody says, whatever I got from you was valuable. At that stage of Krishna consciousness development in my life, whatever I received from you was very valuable. Now I am at a stage where I need more, and I'll happily tell him, I am not the right person to learn this. Probably this is the right person to learn this. And then happily hand him over to somebody. Yes. So it's very interesting for us, and it's very important for us to learn from this pastime and start developing a real feeling of concern for those who are under our care. And this also shows how simplicity of Yashoda and Nanda in these four things that we discussed wins much, much over the sophisticated ideas that Vasudeva and Devaki have. I'll also speak a little bit about the Vrajvasis, because Vrajvasis are also here. It's not just Nanda and Yashoda who is here. So it is explained how when Krishna appeared to Nanda and Yashoda, the next day there was such a huge festival. And every single person in Vraj is equally happy, if not more, in celebrating the appearance of a child to their king and queen. So they identify so much with Nanda and Yashoda. They feel Nanda and Yashoda are so much one family, that whole Vraj is so much one family. A child born in one family is a reason for celebration in the whole community. Now it's easier to celebrate together in a moment of celebration. What about pain in moments of distress? Was that also common? Yes, that was also common. When there was repeated attacks by different demons, and when there was a proposal, there was a joint meeting, and it was proposed that there are too many demons attacking in Gokul and we should shift to Vrindavan. The meeting was not arranged by Nanda. The meeting was arranged by the eldest brother of Nanda Maharaj, Upananda. So it's interesting Nanda's home is being attacked in Gokul. And seeing the constant calamities, the meeting is called by Upananda and he calls a meeting of all the cowherd men and says, this home is being attacked repeatedly. I think we should shift the entire community to another place. Entire community. It means homes, shops, farms, goshalas, anything and everything in that part of geographical area has to be shifted from Gokul across the river Yamuna to Vrindavan. It's a Herculean task. But all of them unanimously agree without having any smallest danger to their own children. So none of these demons, they ever attacked another Gopa. They never attacked any other child in Vrindavan. They just were together and they were ready to shift their entire community just out of concern for that one child, Krishna. So they are together in happiness and they are together in distress. There is one very beautiful shloka in the 16th chapter. 16th chapter is where Kaliya is subdued by Krishna. So it is, this scene is when Kaliya has kind of embraced Krishna, but to people it appears how he has been subdued by Kaliya. And then it is mentioned how Yashoda, when she comes there, she's almost like a statue. She's like a living corpse. It is mentioned in this shloka. Mrutaka Pratika. She's standing, but she's not living. She's not breathing. And in this shloka it is mentioned, Ta Krishna Mataram Apatyamanu Praveshtam Tulya Vyatha Samanugrahya Shuchah Sravantya. So we want to focus on these words. Tulya Vyatha. So Tulya Vyatha, this is 10.16.21. If you read the translation, it is mentioned, all the elderly gopis who had a motherly mood, when they came to that scene, they saw the real mother, Yashoda. She was a living corpse. But Tulya Vyatha means all of the elderly gopis had similar, equal amount of Vyatha, pain, when they saw Krishna in that situation. So happiness is equal, Vyatha is also equal. It means this is one community. In this community, when one person is in distress, the entire community, irrespective of the hereditary line, out of concern for that community, they celebrate together and they feel pain also together. So this is something which we can learn from the Vrajvasis and we can remind ourselves again and again. In fact, Vraj is glorified by Krishna himself in a book which is not exactly in the theme of love. Yes, Bhagavatam is in the theme of love. And primarily we call Gita as a book which is like a law book. It tells us what to do and what not to do. But it is mentioned by the Acharyas that in the highest shloka that the Acharya say, Sarva Dharman Parityajya. So when Krishna is speaking that shloka to Arjun, he is speaking how the goal of everything is to surrender ourselves to Krishna. At that time it is mentioned, as Krishna is speaking that verse, he is reminded of the examples of that verse. Who are those personalities who have given everything that they could think is right just to please Krishna? And he remembers the Vrajvasis. So he wants to say, abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender yourself unto me. But he uses the word Vraja. Mam ekam sharanam Vraja. He could have used the word Agacha. Agacha means come to me, surrender to me. Or Sharanagati. There could be some transformation of the word Sharanagati. Specifically, when Krishna wants to emphasize Sharanagati, especially that Sharanagati at a highest level, without any consideration, he specifically uses the word Vraja. And this is his kind of eulogy, his way of glorifying Vraja in the midst of the chaos, in the midst of the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So this shows how even when Krishna is in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, his love for the Vrajvasis did not go down. And here we see how the Vrajvasis come to Kurukshetra, although it is not the scene of the war. But here is the Vrajvasis, when they come to Kurukshetra, they just keep looking at Krishna out of love and they are mutually inseparable internally. Krishna cannot be separated from Yashodamai and Yashodamai cannot be separated from Krishna. Generally, in this worldly sense, if somebody mispronounces the word Krishna, I have seen personalities correcting them. So some people, they will say, oh, it's not Krishna. Don't you know how you write Krishna? How do you write Krishna in Devanagari? So they say, Krishna. Yes. So you know, there's a lot of correction sometimes. In their own way, they say Krishna, Krishna and Krishna. And what is Vrindavan? Vrindavan is that place where the Supreme Lord gets a nickname. He becomes Kanha. He becomes Kanhaiya. Yes. So here are people who are busy deciding whether it is Krishna, it is Krishna, or it is Krishna. And they want to be right just to please the Supreme Lord. And Vrindavan is a small little village somewhere in this whole big creation where, forget about speaking Krishna, Krishna, or whatever, he gets a nickname. That name is, you know, somewhere else only, and they are called Kanhaiya. And this personality Krishna, who's so worshipable, he loves when he's called Kanhaiya and Kanha and so on, all these other words. That shows how Krishna or any personality, you know, would rather choose to associate and be conquered by those who have genuine care and concern for them, as is exemplified by Krishna, rather than somebody who's take a hereditary claim on them. So these were few points that came to my small attention in regards to this shloka. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jaya. Srimad Bhagavat Mahapurana ki jaya. Anantakoti Vaishnava Granth ki jaya.